We're all playing a lot of games, I think, is what's going on right now. There's a lot of games, just in general. I don't know if you guys have heard of video games. There's a lot of them, and they're all out right now, at least some of them. I wanted to get a bit of a check-in. Federico, what are you up to?
Ooh, that's a good question. Bunch of things, really. Where do I start? Most of my time has been going into two different things. The first one is emulation.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Metaphor Refantasio.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to start with Metaphor. So, okay, I've never played a Persona game before. This is the new game by Team Zero Atlus, the makers of the Persona role-playing games. And I've never played Persona, any game in the Persona series. I think I tried, actually, many years ago on the Vita, Persona 3 Golden. Uh-huh. And I don't know, maybe I was not in the right headspace at the time. I couldn't really get into it. For those not familiar, Persona is a series of role-playing games, JRPGs, that are typically set in a high school environment in Japan. And one of the things that really sets the Persona series apart is this mechanic of... It's both an RPG, but also a life sim, in the sense that you really got to cultivate those relationships with your fellow high school schoolmates. I don't know why I never really spend the time to dig into the Persona series. It's got a... like, Persona, especially thanks to Persona 5, which came out a couple of years ago, and then a definitive edition, I think, came out last year, Persona 5 Royal.
Yeah.
With Persona 5, the series really... almost, I would say it almost became mainstream from a certain perspective. It's got a lot of really dedicated fans. But I never really got into it. So when Atlus announced this project, I think it was called at the time when they announced it a few years ago that they were going to do a brand new RPG set in a fantasy world. It was called just Project Refantasy, maybe something like that. Project Fantasy, Project Refantasy. Now the final name is Metaphor Refantasio, which,
you know, usually these things are like they start
usually
with a crazy name and then simplify it. What if we made it more weird?
What if we actually made it stranger? So it's called Metaphor Refantasio. I don't know. It caught my interest because it was a chance to start over for someone who never really played Persona. And in a fantasy world, brand new story, brand new characters, you don't need any previous knowledge, you don't need to be a certified Persona fan to enjoy this game. So I was like, yeah, sign me up. So I'm almost finished playing the free demo. There's a free demo that you can download. I'm about at 6 hours playing this game, so I'm approaching the end of the demo, and I'm going to buy the full game because by now I'm fully invested in the story. So it's...
demo's the way to go, right? Because the progress carries over.
The progress carries over. You start from the beginning, and you can just take your save file and continue playing the full game. You can play on Steam Deck. Performance was very bad when the first version of the demo came out on Steam. They fixed a bunch of things, and they improved the anti-aliasing, for example. Mm-hmm. So you can set the game to low, medium settings on Steam Deck, and since the Steam Deck's resolution is so low, you can play at a stable 30 FPS without a problem. Of course, if you have a gaming PC, you know, even better. This game doesn't have the best performance, especially in busy towns. So when you're playing like in the central town, in the capital of the world, the frame rate can dip to like 25, 28 Oof. FPS. But it's all right. It's acceptable. Honestly, the thing is that this game is so much fun, and the story is so weird in a good way. You play as this. So this game is set in this fantasy world, and it's really fantasy. Like it's like not Tolkien style fantasy. It's more like what if the aesthetic of Persona was set in this medieval but also kind of futuristic. It's like what if a medieval setting met like a steampunk aesthetic of sorts. It's mm-hmm. it's very strange, very original, I would say. This world is, from what I've seen so far, it tells the story of this society where there are different types of tribes, different races, basically, and essentially it's the kind of system where some tribes have more rights and are more quote unquote important than others.
Okay.
And it tries to make you think about, you know, it's this caste system really where the main protagonist are an Elda, and the Elda are this tribe that are really like looked down upon and discriminated in the world. But there are other types of tribes. There's the people with I don't remember the names, but there's people with horns. Those are the nobles, like the aristocrats in the society. There's the people with dog ears, people with elf ears, and they all have different names and different attributes. And you, as the Elda, are part of this secret mission to basically restore power and put the power back in the hands of this prince. Mm. The prince who the majority of you know, the rest of the world thinks that the prince is dead. Where actually, because he was assassinated years ago, actually the prince was put under a curse by this character named Louis. And Louis is basically the head of the military. And Louis, as you see in the beginning of the game, tries to assassinate the prince, but a bunch of guards protect the prince. So he only manages to cast a curse on the prince, and the prince basically goes into this deep slumber and cannot wake up anymore. But the prince is taken away by one of the guards, and everybody thinks, okay, the prince is dead. The game begins with Louis also assassinating the king. So you see immediately, and there are these beautiful anime-style cutscenes where you see Louis, this very handsome, honestly, like head of the military, just super evil and handsome at the same time, assassinating the king. And so it creates this power vacuum in the world. And now you play as this Elda, and you can name the protagonist. What is funny here is that, and I don't know where the game is going to go with this, but the game asks you to give a name to yourself as the player and also give a name to the main character. Hmm. So like it's sort of like fourth wall breaking in from that perspective, which is really interesting. And and then the story goes, there's going to be an election, and basically I've reached the end of the demo. I don't want to spoil it, but there's this major event where basically the role of the king is up for grabs. And so the game, from what I've known, from what I've heard on other shows and watched a bunch of videos, the game will ask you to win this election, to become the person who wins the election. And by winning the election, you will actually pull a trick and say, aha, I won, but actually I'm going to give the power back to the prince. That's the story.
Okay.
And it's a really fascinating like series of twists and turns in the plot. But mechanically, from what I've heard, again, this game plays effectively like a Persona game where it's a turn-based RPG. You explore dungeons. There's a calendar system where the game tells you, okay, this event will happen in 10 days from now. And, you know, in 10 days, you need to complete this dungeon, or you need to increase your social skills, you know, by becoming closer to this person. And that's another element that's been lifted from a Persona game, right? The social bonds with your with other characters in the world and with your party members. That's also straight from Persona. What is also straight from Persona is the idea of your characters having access to what is called in Metaphor an archetype. So an archetype is basically a job. It's got a job system where you can be an archetype warrior, or you can have a mage archetype, you can have a healer archetype, and multiple archetypes. There are so many of them. You can level up those archetypes. So think of those as like the classic jobs, for example, in a Final Fantasy game. Mm-hmm. Here they're called archetypes, and they are effectively what they're called personas in the Persona series. So your character transforms into an archetype, just like they can transform into a persona in a Persona game. I believe in the Persona games, you shoot yourself in the head when you want to become your persona.
In one of them, you do.
Yeah, here you rip out your heart, which turns out to be a mechanical heart, and you speak into it as if it were a microphone. Like, okay. This game does a bunch of weird things. Like, for example, the monsters in this game that everybody fears are called humans, but they don't look like humans. They look like this honestly gross and grotesque. They look like the paintings of the, I believe, a Dutch artist, Bosch, like from the 1800s or something. Like, there's an excellent article on Polygon, I believe, by Mary Myers about, like, we need to talk about the humans in Metaphor. Look it up. It's not a spoiler. Like, it gives you the idea of what I'm talking about. Like, one of the first humans that you will see in the first dungeon is like this weird hybrid of a person and a giant bird. It's honestly terrifying. So yeah, this game goes places. And what I appreciated from the demo is that every single mechanic is well explained. They are introduced very slowly, very methodically. I think if you're the kind of person who like has been mildly interested in the Persona series, this is a chance to play a game by the same team, the kind of team who's been allowed, like, it kind of reminds me in a way of Super Mario Wonder. Like, it feels like the game that was made by a bunch of people who were like, what about this crazy idea? And somebody else saying, yes, and right. The crazy ideas just keep on coming. So yeah, I played 6 hours. I'm approaching the end of the demo. I'm going to buy the full game, and I'm obsessed. I love it.
I mean, if this is anything like any of the other Atlus games, this is big, like going to be a big, big game. Do you think you're going to see it through? Like, if this is 100 hours, you reckon you'd see it through?
I think the main story is like 50 to 60 and 100 if you want to do all the side quests and stuff. And I think like right now, I want to see this game through more than I want Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. Because like it's so unlike from a story perspective, from a gameplay mechanic perspective, it's so unlike anything else I've ever played.
Well, I guess that's the question actually. Have you played Echoes?
Yes, I've played Echoes. Okay. I've done the first dungeon. That's what I've done. I started with the Gerudo and I've done the first dungeon. We can talk about Zelda later because I see that you've also been playing it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I've been playing that I cannot recommend enough is I recently acquired an Odin 2 Mini.
Mm-hmm. Let's go!
Okay,
Shahid is ready because the Odin 2 Mini is basically a PS Vita that runs Android. That's what it is. This is a PS Vita. It's literally inspired by the PS Vita design. I got one in white, which looks amazing. It runs Android. It's got a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 chip inside. This has become my all-in-one emulation machine. It's Android, so it's very easy to set up with a launcher, with a bunch of emulators from the Play Store or sideloaded from the web. And more specifically, I've been emulating at 3x the resolution. So 1080p, GameCube games, Wind Waker, and Super Mario Sunshine. I've been emulating those on the 5-inch displays. This is a tiny handheld. About the size, it's like a chunkier, thicker PS Vita, but it's about the same size. 5-inch mini LED display. It's not OLED, it's mini LED, like the old iPad Pros, for example. Really vibrant colors, really bright. It suffers from some slight issues of, not necessarily like the blooming issue that the iPad Pro with mini LED had. It's kind of like the opposite. It's got some vignetting going on, it darkens the edges of the screen, but it actually looks kind of cool. it actually looks kind of cinematic, and the colors, man, the colors are just so vibrant and satisfying to look at. So like playing Wind Waker at 1080p upscaled at 30 frames per second, because like this CPU has plenty of headroom to go by. Mm-hmm. I'm even playing like with widescreen mods and custom textures. I think I mentioned this one on the show before. I really enjoy the custom textures by this creator on Patreon. They go by the name of Enrico Magnifico, and they create these upscaled and some of them hand-drawn 1080p and 4K textures for popular Nintendo GameCube and Wii games. They have collections for Super Mario Sunshine, Twilight Princess, Luigi's Mansion. They have a bunch, and you can support them directly on Patreon. So yeah, I've been playing a ton of GameCube on the Odin 2 Mini, and just one of the things I love about this is that since it's basically an Android phone, right? So you can use sleep and resume whenever you want, just like you can unlock and lock and unlock your phone, and it just it's not like you're turning off your computer, right? When the device is locked, it goes to sleep, just like a phone does. So I can pick up the Odin Mini and resume my emulation from the night before as if I never left. The battery doesn't last as long as the full-size Odin 2 does, but it's still plenty of battery. Like, it's you can barely hear the fans spin when you're emulating GameCube, which is wild. Mm. But this device you can use for PlayStation 2, you can use for PSP emulation, you can use for Vita emulation on a device that looks like a PS Vita, which is wild. You can download the Vita 3K emulator for Android. And just the idea of having something so small that I can throw in a bag. It's so much smaller than the Odin 2. It's smaller than a Nintendo Switch. It's like when you put it on top of a Steam Deck, it's kind of ridiculous. It looks like the child of a Steam Deck. The Steam Deck is a big handheld. This one is so portable. It's got USB-C, obviously. It's got micro HDMI if you want to do display out. And once again, a beautiful 5-inch mini LED display. I would say right now, if you're looking for a handheld that is very portable, that you want to use for a bunch of emulation, you want to use for streaming, right? Because on Android, you can use GeForce Now without the same limitations of iOS, or you want to use PlayStation Remote Play, or you want to use Xbox Cloud Streaming. You can also do all of those. If you're looking for like a very portable, all-in-one device for streaming and emulation, this is my recommendation right now, the Odin 2 Mini. The Odin 2, the standard one, if you're looking for something that is more full size and more ergonomic, obviously there's also going to be the Odin 2 Portal, which was just announced, and there's an Indiegogo campaign. That's going to be a 7-inch OLED device. So AEON, which is the company behind these devices, they're going to offer three different sizes. They're going to have the Odin 2 Mini, which is 5 inches, the Odin 2, which is 6 inches, which is what you have, and the Odin 2 Portal, which is going to be the big one with OLED and 120 hertz refresh rate at 7 inches. So you can pick your size. They all have the same specs, basically. They all have the same system on a chip inside. But if you're looking for something very portable that you can just throw in a bag, I wouldn't say that it's pocketable because it's not exactly pocketable, but it's very easy to carry around. This is my recommendation.
See, I would just say, if it's not pocketable, just get bigger pockets, man. I mean, that's what I'm
also that
you.
Also that you can get
cargo shorts,
cargo
exactly.
shorts, cargo shorts,
get over
man
yourself.
Bag, man yeah. bag, purse,
yeah, sling,
whatever you like.
I bet it fit nicely in a sling.
It does, yeah, it does.
Absolutely. There you go, no excuses.
Yeah, yeah.
So I gotta ask you, what's the aspect ratio of this thing?
16:9. Okay. It's a widescreen aspect ratio, so that's why I'm using those widescreen mods.
Yeah.
Because the GameCube is a 4:3 aspect ratio, and but for GameCube games, you can find cheat codes or patches that you can apply on a computer. A very popular format for applying patches is the X-Delta file format, and on the Mac there's an application that you can download. It's called Multipatch, that allows you to take your ISO file for a GameCube game, point at the file, point at the .xdelta patch that you download from the internet. It patches the file, and so that ISO becomes a widescreen game that you can play on a widescreen handheld.
And presumably you've tried this all and it works well?
It all works well. I have patched Super Mario Sunshine to be widescreen, and then you can use a bunch of cheat codes. Because what's interesting about the GameCube generation, and also this applies to the PS2, companies and game developers were still trying to figure out at the time things like camera control, for example. And so many of these games, like Super Mario Sunshine and Wind Waker, they have the inverted camera controls, which I don't know how to use. And so you can find cheat codes in Dolphin, which is the emulator that I'm using for GameCube and Wii. You can just say, add a cheat code, and you can just Google, you know, Google, I don't know, Super Mario Sunshine cheat code for inverted camera controls. It's just a string of text, copy and paste.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Wind Waker, and like Wind Waker has some options for this, as does the emulators, to like help you adjust it, because it's like they're inverted, which is just like it's crazy.
It's weird now. It's a little strange now. But yeah, obviously the Dolphin emulator you can find on a bunch of platforms. It's excellent on the Mac. You actually have a little more controls on desktop if you want to use Dolphin. I mean, it's been around for 20 years. On desktop, it's got so many options. But on mobile, and on Android, since Apple won't allow Dolphin with JIT on iOS, on Android, you do have access to the essentials. So upscaling the resolution, installing custom textures, exporting saves, save states, and loading custom textures and graphic mods, which is what I'm doing.
All right, this episode is brought to you by Celtrios, the shoot 'em up game with a tiny ship, big weapons, waves of foes, power-ups, and obstacles. Celtrios has no ads, no in-app purchases, no subscription, and nothing is locked, and it's for Apple platforms. You can get it on your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad, and your Apple TV. There are 13 stages of the game, and you can start from any of them, plus you can resume play later if the app is quit, of course. What I love about Celtrios is the player-first mentality that they have for this game, that there are no ads, there are no in-app purchases, there's no subscription, you know what you're getting when you go and get the app for yourself. And it's on every platform that you can want, and you can just choose your favorite stages and replay them to your heart's content. You have tons of ways to play with customization to keep it fresh, like ship configuration, dozens of abilities, Mac full screen options, randomizing, and a hard mode. Plus, there's a huge, high quality soundtrack of over 45 minutes of music. The game keeps expanding too over time. There have been over 85 free updates to Celtrios so far, and the entire thing is made by an independent developer. You can play solo or grab a friend for two-player action, and your Mac will support various inputs, of course. Or you can grab a controller if you're on iOS to enable it. If you love traditional shoot 'em up games, or you just want a quality game that is fun to play again and again with none of the usual annoyances that other games will have, Celtrios is for you. The Mac version is on Steam, and there's a free demo, so you can try it out. The iOS and tvOS versions you can find on the App Store. If you want to find out more, go to kevingrant.name/apps to learn more, or click the link in the show notes and they'll know that you came to them from this show. That's kevingrant.name/apps or click the link in the show notes. Our thanks to Celtrios for their support of this show and Relay. Shahid, what you got going on?
Well, first let me say I didn't know anything about this sponsor, but that game sounds exactly like my kind of game.
When they contacted us, I was like, well, this is a Shahid game.
Yeah. Like, so I'll be buying that straight after. I mean, obviously there's a queue. I've got to go for the Odin first. But as soon as I bought the Odin, I will get a copy of this game. Sounds like my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I've been playing the most video games that I have played since I left PlayStation.
Okay.
I mean, I've been playing hours a day. But I have to say my selection of games has been rather conservative. And the vast majority of the time I spent has been on Modern Warfare 3 online. Multiplayer, and just getting my derriere handed to me again and again and again. It's so tiresome. And eventually I thought, you know what? I used to be good at this game, multiplayer. Used to be half decent. I mean, I wouldn't say I was the world's greatest or anything. That would be ludicrous, but I was pretty decent. I won quite a few of my games. I'd done prestige, you know, leveled up again massively again and again and again. And and was decent. So I thought, if I could do it before, surely I can get better again. Now, I'm not saying I've got to those levels again, but I have gone down this rabbit hole. The kind of thing that you would expect a young man like Federico to do and not me. Mm. I've been watching a ton of YouTube videos. I've been watching all these young streamers and trying to keep up with the modern language, which I've had to ask my son about.
You're trying to get on the meta.
Yeah, I mean, I just need... There were really basic things. Like, for example, my aim was awful. And then I learned that to aim with a controller, you need to stop mucking about with the right stick, because the right stick is what controls your camera, right? So if someone crosses your path, so long as you're moving, there's a small amount of tolerance, and they call it ADS. I still haven't worked out what that stands for, which tracks your opponent. And so that's improved my aim massively. The other thing people do is they set up private matches against bots.
Yep.
So they can learn the map, and they enable stuff like headshot mode. So that's what I've been doing. I've been in crazy stuff, like going for the really, really small levels. Really small levels, and I put like 12 bots on there and just one or two teammates for me, and turned it to headshot only. So I basically get, again, my behind handed to me again and again and again, but I've improved massively. And when I started off, I was getting like, you know, well, practically double digit kills, which was not great, but I was dying load. So my kill to death ratio was something ludicrous, like 0.2. But as of yesterday, in these private matches, it's moved up to about 2.5, which is pretty decent. So I'm getting triple digit kills. This
so
is just
you're basically
by practicing.
Doing drills, right?
Yeah,
like, is what you're essentially. Yeah, yeah. That's a really interesting thing, because you know, obviously, a lot of games have like a practice mode, but this is just allowing you to set up your own parameters for a practice, right?
That's what happens when you set up a private match.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of configurability in this game is ludicrous. It's just, there's so many ways you can set things up, change the game rules. Yeah, and you can obviously practice with a ton of different weapons with different abilities. So, you know, if you're, for example, if you're using an M16, which is one of my favorite weapons, then that fires in 3-shot bursts, right? So you've got to be really, really careful how you use that. But those 3 shots are tremendously powerful. Or if you've got a gun with a limited magazine and you're up against 6 foes, well, your aim had better be good. Otherwise, you're just going to be spraying and praying, and you'll be dead before you've taken down a single one of them. So the ability to set up these practice runs, boot camp drills, is really useful. And it means I don't look ridiculous when I go online and play multiplayer. Because my tendency when I play multiplayer COD is just go all out. Forget about getting any cover. Forget about little things. I mean, there's just really small stuff that I didn't even appreciate. For example, the guns are right-handed, right? Which is why most players go around obstacles or cover clockwise. Because then when they peek out from behind the cover, the right-handed gun is peeking out and you're showing a lot less of your profile.
This is
I mean, I didn't even realize it.
This is, it is, it's hilarious to me, the levels at which people are considered. Like, that's mm-hmm. that is a lot of thought, right? Like, that's just so interesting to me that people are putting this much thought into it. I mean, but of course they are, but I don't know why, but that is just like a very funny thing. That's a very funny thing to consider.
I agree. But then, you know, when you realize that this is a multi-billion dollar franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think about the amount of work that's gone into it, and you think about how much money esports players make when they do well at it, and you realize that this isn't just a video game. It is an industry in and of itself.
Yeah.
And just like any industry, you know, you can become extremely skilled at it, and it's up to you. You can be just the average Joe Bloggs, and you can have a bit of fun, or you can say, okay, I'm never going to be a pro, no matter what,
mm-hmm.
you know, but maybe I could enjoy myself.
How good can I get?
How could I get to the point where I feel competent and I don't feel like just some old guy trying to relive his youth? And I'm getting to that point now where I'm genuinely enjoying it. And this is the approach. The funny thing is, this is the approach I took. I've talked about my story at PlayStation a lot, but I'm going to use the example again. I didn't enjoy my first 5 years at PlayStation. Of course, I loved the last 5 years. And the difference between the two was my attitude. My attitude was one of entitlement. And what video games taught me was if you can get back to a growth mindset, if you can have that beginner's mind, if you can get really curious, you know, about what's going on and how you can improve, then suddenly you start to love what you're doing. And if you can love what you're doing, the thing that you thought was what brought you misery is the thing that brings you joy. And I know it sounds ridiculous when you're talking about a video game, but as I said, this is not a video game. Call of Duty is an industry. And because of that, I'm now beginning to really love it. So what have I been playing it on? I've been playing on mostly on PS5, but because it's in Game Pass for Xbox, I played it on that as well. And of course, you know, I've got the top of the line controllers for each of those devices. And I can finally tell you unreservedly which controller is better for, well, certainly for Modern Warfare.
So this is out of the Xbox Elite controller and the DualSense Edge.
Edge, correct. And it's the DualSense Edge. And I'm not just saying that because it's PlayStation.
Sony Pony. Here he is.
No. let me explain, because I used to prefer the Xbox.
Okay.
And there was this joke for a few years where whenever I would be talking to my students when I was working with PlayStation Talents, and I would be playing their games, I would ask them to forget the fact that I was using an Xbox controller. It just felt more natural in my hands. And it still does. But what feels better from controllability is the Edge. Those sticks just feel a lot more controllable and precise. And of course, with the Edge, you have the amazing feedback. It's just absolutely superb. Oh, here's another thing, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guides tell you to turn off the force feedback and the rumble. And they say that because it affects your aim. You know, talking about a target a long way away, the tiniest movement of your hands will affect your aim. Doesn't matter that you've got ADS. If you want to go for headshots from distance, which is what the very best players seem to do, they seem to pick you out without effort, then that's what they do. Okay, so I talked about PS5 and Xbox. But what I haven't said is, you might remember, I've got an absolutely killer PC. It's obviously not as killer as Federico's, but I would never make such bold claims anyway, but it is pretty damn decent.
Mm.
So because there's Game Pass, I decided to have a go on PC. And of course, I got absolutely destroyed because I wasn't familiar with the mouse and keyboard controls. But after a while, my aim was considerably better on PC with a mouse. And now I know why they have these console provisions. Before, I didn't even notice these minutiae. You know, why is it that you've got a little bit of controller support? And the reason is because I wasn't good enough to appreciate the difference. But now I've got to the point where, oh my God, aim on the PC is so good. You know, you can swing around ridiculously quickly. You can track aim beautifully. But of course, it comes at the cost of movement because you're using WASD for movement. And then you have to stretch out your little finger to tap the shift key for running, or double tap to go into a tactical sprint and that kind of thing. And of course, that's when you start to go down the rabbit hole. Okay, maybe I need to completely reconfigure my keyboard. Oh, hold on. I'm using a bit more effort for my keyboard, right? Using a bit more effort for my keyboard. So you know what I did? Federico knows at this point what I did. I ordered a Keychron with Hall Effect magnetic switches. Now, what are these? These are essentially analog switches. And the beauty of these is you can set the activation and deactivation point at any height. What does that mean? That means that when you're aiming, I think the best practice when you're in a shootout is to rapidly move left and right. What do you need to be able to do to move rapidly left and right? You need ultra-responsive key switches that trigger and de-trigger at any given height. So you would not necessarily have to completely release the key as you would have to on a traditional keyboard in order to change direction. So you get a massive advantage in left to right movement. Yes, I spent $240 on a keyboard just so that I could slightly improve my real-time strafing in a single video game.
Look, if you're going to spend money on something, why wouldn't it be this? You know?
You speak my language.
Why would it not be this?
And down the other path, the exact opposite path, of course I did the Federico thing and tried it on an iPad with PS Remote Play.
Okay.
And got absolutely ruined. I got
cooked. Can't play that way. You can't play that
You can't.
Way.
Because
did I ever
you
tell
need
you,
everything.
Because, I mean, I'm sure we spoke about it, but, I tried, when I got a Portal, right, and I was playing the F1 game at the time.
Yeah.
And basically, I was just crashing all the time. Because, like, I was driving fine, and then just any latency, and I've hit the wall. Like, there are certain types of games that I'm not sure that these systems are meant for. And I think anything with like high risk, high reward, I think when you add latency into that, unless everyone's doing it, then I don't know what you think, Federico, but I just think that it's too, that latency can just ruin the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. Really, it only works for certain types of games.
Yeah.
And this is the definition of one that just doesn't work with it.
When you need every single tiny advantage, the worst thing you can do is throw a tiny bit of latency into the mix. And listen, as we all know, this is one area in which I also went down the Federico rabbit hole. There seems to be a trend on this show, right, of basically the young man in Italy offering up expensive solutions and the old man in the UK hastily buying them all. What I would suggest is you get some serious affiliate code stuff going. At least you would then profit from it. But, you know, I want to thank you for being such a good friend that you don't take advantage of my gullibility. Anyway,
so you think.
So even though I got the ridiculously fast router, which of course Federico now has an even faster router, even though I'm using an iPad Pro, the recent model, so it's got Wi-Fi 7 support, even though the router I bought is 6E. Thanks, Federico. Already out of date.
Sure.
So despite all of that, despite the PS5 being in the shed, despite my having spent £1,200 plus to ensure I had wired internet to every single part of my home, gigabit, of course, and with minimal ping across the board, it just doesn't cut it. And that's fine. I'm not worried about that. I've got plenty of other places I can play it. So what is the only thing about this whole system that's annoying? For me, it's the UI. The UI and the UX are still absolutely infuriating in that with the PS5, the idea is, as you well know, and our audience probably well knows, you should be able to have updates going on in the background. For some reason, Modern Warfare doesn't care about this. And every time there's some update to be done and you have to go through 3 restart cycles or more sometimes because it hasn't updated and it logs you out all the time.
Because you're going to
go
launcher,
back to the title
right?
screen.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And they keep updating the UI because the UI was atrocious. It's now a bit better. They've got things like shortcuts now. They've got these panels which are shortcuts to your most frequently played game. But, you know, this is just the very front end. I'm not complaining about the details. Those panels are necessary because if you want to get into the weeds, then of course you've got to menu dive because there's just too much stuff. I'm just talking about the very front end. That experience seems to be unnecessarily, I'm going to use the word broken. I think that's appropriate for something that is so expensive and such a big franchise. But it doesn't stop me from enjoying it, so I don't want to make a big deal about that.
Are you looking forward to Black Ops? Are you going to play Black Ops?
I already have.
No, the new one.
Black Ops 6. It came out today.
Did it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah,
huh.
Today's launch day.
The campaign? And
yes.
Oh,
and it's on Game Pass.
I know what I'm doing this weekend then.
It's on Game Pass. So I've already started that.
Okay.
And for me, the interesting thing is how different it feels to Modern Warfare. And I have played previous Black Ops and enjoyed them, but I was more of a Modern Warfare person.
Yeah.
But I never noticed the differences. And that's the thing. You become, you know, when you get really into the weeds, when you really start to explore the game and the world underneath it, which is, I know, something that both you and Federico routinely do, but I haven't had the time to do, you start to appreciate the differences and you get more discerning.
Sure.
So I'm not going to say which one is worse, which one is better, because I'm too early into Black Ops 6 to be able to say anything about it. All I can say is that the beginning was really good. I noticed no loading delays at all. So that whole experience, which I'm complaining about on Modern Warfare 3, didn't seem to be there, certainly not in the campaign mode. And it's quite possible that those delays will be there in the multiplayer mode, but I'll have a look at those later. So I'm excited about it because I've got it obviously on Game Pass, and it will be on the PC as well. So I'll be playing the PC version. I want to get good at the PC version at some point, but for now I've installed it on the Xbox and it has been, I like it. I like the stories in Black Ops.
Oh, the
stories
the campaign,
in Modern Warfare are not as good.
The campaign review scores are really high. Like,
huh,
eights and nines out of tens, basically, across the board.
Black Ops usually does review better on the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I want. I mean, I respect greatly what you're doing. I would never want to do it, right? You know, like, that the multiplayer stuff. It's like, I know that Federico's had his multiplayer era, right, with Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking the whole time, I was remembering Federico doing competitive Pokemon, right? Like, it's a lot of the same things of, like, you're getting into the weeds, you're maxing on the minute details. It's basically like, you know, people talk about, like, their macros when it comes to, like, weight gain and stuff. That kind of sounds to me, it's like a similar thing. Like, you're working on your macros. It's just not what I want from gaming, but I have always enjoyed the Call of Duty campaigns because, like, the gameplay is so tight, right? Like, when they're on, like, when they've got a good one, like, they know how to make those games feel good to play. And the story of this one is interesting to me, like, going more into kind of like the Cold War. So it's like more towards modern history. So I'm intrigued about it. And yeah, I mean, the fact that, like, I mean, like, IGN gave it a 90, like, it's, you know, people seem to be digging it, so I'm gonna have to give it a go.
Yeah, all of the beta scores, not the scores, but the beta reviews have been positive. I've not seen anyone negative about it, and they seem to have put in a lot of effort. But I mean, going into the weeds again, there's one interesting piece of detail that I had completely missed, and that is the fact that anyone who wants to play this seriously, either of these two games, by the way, multiplayer, needs to be using a headset, right? And the reason you need to use a headset is because if you're playing multiplayer, you need the cues of the other players walking. You need to hear their footsteps.
Sure.
Of course, you can't hear everybody's footsteps because there's a section where you can configure tactical boots. And some people wear tactical boots that are pretty much silent, but a lot of players don't. And so for that reason, wearing a headset is important. Now, I do have a top-of-the-line, well, it was top-of-the-line at the time, Arctis Pro whatever headset. But then I started to watch a lot of videos where they said, no, the sound stage is a bit cluttered on these. You're better off using decent headphones. I thought, okay, I have decent headphones. I have a set of Hi-Fi Man HE560s, which were around $1,000 US at the time. A Relay FM contribution. This was thanks to our good friend Marco Arment, who recommended these. So I got those. But of course, it never occurred to me for a minute that I could use these to play a video game. What do they need? They need a DAC. Now, I do have a couple of DACs, which he also recommended. Well, I have a DAC and I have a headphone amp. But the same company, who we can put in the show notes, but I won't pronounce for family reasons.
Yep, I use a bunch of their products too.
Yeah, so they have got a gaming DAC called, appropriately enough, the Gunner, without the E. Yep. I guess who bought one is awaiting delivery on Monday.
There it is. Oh, I'm looking at it. I mean, I use a bunch of their stuff, and I'm very happy. Like, I use the Magni 2 and the product that they used to make called the Word, which they don't make anymore.
Right. But that's WYRD, really, right?
Yeah, which is basically just it's just like a USB thing. So like I can have my USB DAC plugged in and I have an ability to turn it on and off. But it's like, it gives like a clean signal, it says. But I've been very happy. I just wanted something that I could run my my audio system through and could choose to turn it on and off without it necessarily always being on when my computer was on.
Yeah. So, yes. So I'm looking forward to that and hoping I will get a tiny little edge when playing multiplayer. But whether I do or not, I'm not fussed. I think it will improve the experience. It will clear out the sound stage. I'm a very audio first person. My sight is not that great. My hearing is amazing, you know, musical background and so on. So that sound stage, I think, will give me not just an edge, because I might not be skilled enough to use the edge, but it will make my experience more enjoyable. And, you know, if there's one thing I've learned in life, it's worth spending money on things that bring you joy.
You two are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm definitely of the same ilk. But what I like about the both of you is that you'll find a thing and you're just going to go all in on it.
Yes.
Yeah, I respect that.
Yes.
Shahid, I'm very excited to see where your COD journey takes you, and I'm very proud of you for maximizing your headshots.
Thank you, my friend. I played other stuff, but I think I've covered enough for now. That's really been the majority.
So the game I've been playing the most recently is Balatro on the iPhone. It's just so good. It's just so good. I think at this point, it is my game of the year. Balatro just in general is my game of the year.
Whoa.
At this point. It's just superb. And it's so impressive to me how this game works so incredibly well on multiple platforms. I mean, obviously it does. It's a simple game, right? But like to be able to get two major releases like this, you know, like to be able to get the original release and then the iPhone release in the same year, it's kind of incredible that they've pulled that off, and they pulled it off really well. Now, I haven't completed Astrobot yet. I think that is the game that is closest. I put Astrobot down for Echoes of Wisdom. If Echoes of Wisdom was 70% of the game that it is, I think I would like it more. Like, I would say I'm probably about that amount of the way through the game. And when I play Echoes of Wisdom, I love it. But I am seldom drawn to play it.
I actually feel the same way. Yeah. I actually feel the same way. Like, when I play it, the moment to moment feels great.
Yeah.
But when I'm not playing it, I don't feel the urge to play it.
Exactly.
It's a strange feeling.
And I think that's just good game design, right? Like, is what is saving it in that moment. That, like, the game is designed so well that it's so fun to play. And the problem solving is really good. But I don't know what it is. It's just missing something which is pulling me back. Like, for the first, like, I don't know, week or two, like, I did want to play it a bunch. But now as it's, like, gone on further, I haven't had as much time to play it recently. And now I'm feeling like I'm starting to get pulled away. But I feel like I'm close enough that I do want to try and see it through. But I think at some point soon I'm going to have to start doing some prioritizing, because I do want to make sure I complete Astrobot before the end of the year, because Astrobot could stick the landing, and I'm confident that it could stick the landing in a way that would make it my game of the year. Because it really is a bit of a toss-up between Balatro and it. And I think at the moment, just like, Balatro is just more on my mind because I've been playing it on the iPhone just like tons. It's just superb. And I'm actually, I think, pretty good at it too. But I have a couple of games that I've got my eye on. One is Metaphor ReFantazio.
Yes.
I do want to try it, because basically I have also been keen on the Persona games. Like, people talk so highly of them, I'm interested in them. But it's a bit intimidating. You know, it's always a bit intimidating to start with the fifth, even if they're not connected. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like you're starting with the fifth installment. But obviously Metaphor is new, and there's enough people in my life and in the content that I enjoy who have picked this game up, who usually do not play these types of games, and they're like, oh, but this is it though. So I do want to try it. I'm not sure when I'm going to get to it, but I do want to try it. I also am quite keen on the next Dragon Age game.
Mm.
Just in what I've seen so far, I think Dragon Age will succeed for me, maybe where Baldur's Gate failed a little bit. I've really liked Baldur's Gate, but the combat was novel, but it wasn't what I wanted. Like, it was interesting to play D&D, but I didn't feel like I had the amount of control that I wanted to have, because you don't have the control. And also, Baldur's Gate is incredible because of the amount of ways in which you can advance through the story. But I think Federico will understand this. There was a point where I was like feeling like I was missing too much of the game by advancing, because I knew how much story there was. And just like, there was this one point where I got to the end of like act two or whatever, and I was about to start act three, and it's like, hey, do you want to start act three? And I'm like, sure. And then it's like, oh, all of these mission lines, you just can't do them now. And I was like, oh, well, I didn't really know that was going to happen. And so then I kind of was a bit like, I'm missing out on this. I don't know. And it also got a bit convoluted in the third act for me. So I feel like Dragon Age is definitely a smaller game than Baldur's Gate, but I think has a lot of, well, at least people expect it will have a lot of the same ideas of like some branching narratives and being able to have different relationships with different people in your party, but it being a more condensed version of that, I think, might be a nice thing to try. And so they're I have my eye on those games. And I think really the first one that I pick up between these two, because Dragon Age is out next week, I think. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's which one, if Dragon Age reviews really highly, I think I'm going to start with that, just because I know that Metaphor is going to be like 100 hours. And I don't think Dragon Age will be. And I feel like I only really have the capacity for one of these types of games at a time. So they're kind of, it's going to be one of those two next. But before then, I want to try and see if I can knock off Astrobot. But
only one of them is called ReFantazio.
You know what? That's actually a great point.
I'm just saying.
You've made a very good point. There is only one game called ReFantazio. ReFantazio, definitely a better name than The Veil Guard. You know,
The Veil Guard. I mean, ReFantazio. Or you could be really Italian about it and be ReFantazio.
ReFantazio.
So you should have done that before.
Metaphor ReFantazio.
Oh my god! When
you read that, Federico, like when you just see the name, how are you pronouncing it in your head?
No, the problem is that my brain is my brain is a weird explosion of English and Italian sounds, and unfortunately I have been replugged into the English language. So when I look at it now in my head, even though I'm Italian, in my head I say ReFantazio.
Fair.
That doesn't surprise me. I would imagine that because you started playing video games really young, that you kind of adopted the lingua franca, which is a really weird term to use for this, of video games at the time, which is English.
Yep.
And now, what other show are you going to hear someone say the lingua franca of video games?
I don't know.
Beautiful expression that goes so well with ReFantazio.